How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, and we are at episode 192, Rick. It is quickly approaching 200. We should hit that by season start, I would imagine.
Perfect.
But yeah, so I've got Rick Collins, of course. You folks that watch consistently know that Rick is a regular. And he was the president of and still is the president of Jackal Den. The Jackal Den is still alive and well, from what we understand down there in Dallas. And from what Rick told me, and he's going to expound upon this, the Houston Sabercats, kind of an extended invitation, like, okay, so we're the only team left in Texas. Join our crew. I think it's called the Saber Bros.
Saber Bros. Yeah, there's a couple of groups down there, but they're the ones that we regularly do meet up with before matches. So,
yeah, they're a good lot. And they've got quite a fan group going on and a lot of good things, obviously, going on down there in Houston. So, you haven't identified yourself. You're still a they, them. right.
That is correct. I have not identified myself to any other fandom at this point. My fandom is still up for grabs this season. So I'm rocking another team that has disappeared from the MLR schedule here on my jersey. And I'm rocking a Den Dog hat from our Jackal Den clothing supplier.
Nice. And I suppose that's why Scott isn't with us. He saw the old jersey, cried, and couldn't get himself.
couldn't bear to be seen.
Like, nah, can't do it. Can't do it. Pain still hurts.
It's too close.
Too close. But hey, listen, if you want to go with your distant cousins, the Hounds, you're welcome to join us. But I know you got, we were talking before the show, folks, and Rick is talking about traveling down to Houston, traveling maybe down to NOLA. For some matches, so I'm sure he's going to get his fill of MLR action this year.
Yeah, and I will be glued to the TV every weekend, of course. So,
yeah, and we're going to talk about that, folks. So, what's on tap for 192 of the Rugby Rant Podcast Show? We're excited. We had to take a skip last week. A lot of things going on for Scott and I, and Rick graciously said, "Okay, no worries. We'll put it on pause. We'll hit you next week." So we're going to kind of pick up that mantle piece from last week, and we're going to talk about USA Rugby, and we're going to look both at the Tonga match as well as the Spain match, which just happened last week. And we're going to kind of hit the idea of overall, what do we think of the November or fall test series where the U.S. went 3-0. But we can't forget that MLR is still on the horizon because the schedule just came out. We'll talk about some elements of the schedule, not just that, you know, kind of the troubles that the compressed schedule has created, especially with the Players Association, but just generally, you know, how this scheduling could impact.
Hey, there's some stadiums on the schedule that I hadn't seen the name of in quite a while. So it is interesting.
It is a fair point. It is interesting to see some teams reach out and go to some different stadiums. I think San Diego is one of those. The Anthem might be another one. I know Yeah, I know. Like I said, San Diego is going to do it because they have a festival going on. Utah is another one.
LA. That's right.
Yeah.
LA is going to be playing a little bit in a different stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be fun for the fans. Get a little different flair, see what else is going on in their fan experience. And I think the stadium do play, Rick, a little bit into some of the reasons why we have
why we're getting the scheduling issues that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. And people have to understand that a little bit. So we'll get into that pretty deeply as the show wears on. No Around the Pitch. We'll forego the typical appetizer, as we shall say, and we'll just get to the meat of the bones. Before we do that, I got to ask, in the spirit, because Rick was joining, I decided to pour myself a toddy. You know, it is, we're getting the holiday season, and I thought, what the hell? Cheers. So, you know, I've got, I got to ask, what are you drinking, Rick?
Glenallachie. So it's actually a bottle that I brought back from Scotland after my wedding. Yeah. We toured the Highlands and Speyside and enjoyed plenty of scotch and the beautiful countryside of Scotland.
Oh, now, is your
and rugby? A USA U20 rugby match.
There you go. There you go. That's cool. That's a good pickup right there. And I know your lovely bride enjoys a good rugby day, just like all the rest of us.
We even saw on Highlands game day, which was quite fun. I've never been to a Highlands games thing, and it was a blast. We had a great time. So
nice. Now, is your beautiful bride a scotch drinker then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
She is not as big as I am, but she partook in every single Scotch experience. So
it's hard to get a bigger Scotch guy than you, though. So let's be
Scotch,
fair.
Scotch, Scotch.
All right. Well, folks, we're settling in. The drinks are flowing. Rick and I are feeling a little loose, so expect this to be a wild and crazy 192 episode.
Let's go.
Let's LFG, baby. Let's go. So first on tap, let's talk about Tonga. About 2.5 weeks ago, the United States played Tonga and got a victory, 36-17, avenged, by the way, a 2019 pool play loss to Tonga. And I might add, before we start digging into this one, I do have to mention that 2019 loss, because it shades it a little bit. We look back and just see it as a loss, but folks, you got to remember, when we played them, we were at a bit of a disadvantage. We just come off our second pool match against Argentina.
Man, that schedule was brutal.
And that's right. It was absolutely, I'm still bitter about that schedule. World Rugby did not do any Tier 2 nations justice with that schedule, because Argentina, then we roll 3 days later and we're playing Tonga, a match we obviously could have won and at least got a 1-2 record in pool play.
So, my opinion, you had the decision against Argentina, either lay down for them, right, in the hope that 4 days later, you're going to be able to beat Tonga or go after them. And you never know what happens. And Gary, it was still Gary at that time, I guess, he said to go after them. And, I don't know that I totally agree with that. You want to win every match, but let's be fair, like in a World Cup situation, when you're tier two and you're not really expected to win, that opportunity gets Tonga. We just left that out there. I really think that was an opportunity to get a win.
Yeah, agreed. And then you had a tsunami, which caused some of the venues to be changed up. Unfortunately, US had to move halfway across country.
Something like
500 and some odd miles across to a different stadium in that three or four day turnaround. So it made it rather difficult. So I think that shades that match. All that being said, let's talk about that Tongan match. What were your thoughts on that match as you watched it?
So it was the exact way I would have attacked Tonga. I think we were a little bit loose at the edges, but overall I thought we played about as good a match as could be expected from this group of players. In the past, right, we were always putting together a team with about 10 guys from Europe who hadn't played together in a year, 2 years. I mean, long periods of time, because we were only getting three or four international matches a year at that time. And so it was just a huge challenge to get these guys together to play in the course of, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And but you had these phenomenally talented players coming, and McGinty could tell you, like, just some absolutely incredible players. And this is, you know, as SMLR is just kind of getting its legs under it. So there aren't really that many talented Americans coming out of MLR. I think what you saw is that MLR can produce very talented players. And I think adding into that, the sprinkling of the international guys, right? The guys who are playing over in the UK or in continental Europe, I think is going to be the way we move forward, instead of vice versa. And we were just talking about it. The rosters that these teams are putting together for MLR for this upcoming season, I'm and there have been some huge names in the past, but the depth across all these teams, and not just with Dallas leaving, but I think some of the players that are coming in, and then USA international players who are deciding, you know what? I actually have a great chance of playing as an Eagle into the future if I come back and play an MLR, and it's really not that bad.
Well, let me ask you, Rick. I want to talk about that for just a moment, because you mentioned the fact that in this, I think it was a 33-man traveling roster that was on this.
With like a 60-player pool almost, 55, 60-player pool.
I think there were only three players that weren't MLR players.
In the starting 15.
No, in the total.
In the whole roster.
Yeah, in the whole roster. Oh,
that could be true.
And I think what we're seeing, don't forget, we're seeing some of those players who are playing overseas, you know, and I'm talking about a guy like, for example, Greg Peterson. Greg Peterson was playing overseas, and then he came back to San Diego last year, and I think we're seeing
more
and
more of that. He was in Newcastle as of like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. You know, obviously AJ's not, and there was
Pifoletti.
But my question to you is, do you think that has been kind of an expectation to a degree from Scott? In other words, saying, look, like AJ is an anomaly, right? AJ's an anomaly. You go, AJ gets a pass. Pifoletti, again, an anomaly. He gets a pass. But, hey, look, if you don't have any better offers overseas, all things being said, come back to the United States and play here so we can get eyes on you every week.
I mean, just look at what he's doing with Anthem, right? You're not just a U-23 Eagles program now over there. It's not the USA Hawks reimagined. It's an actual USA Eagles side.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me if he's putting it into the minds of these players. Hey, I am going to be choosing from amongst MLR players to play international competition with the Eagles. So I like that. It's a huge risk early. It was hugely risky going into the PNC this year. It was hugely risky going into these fall internationals. But he clearly knows what he's doing. You know, X's and O's wise, I thought we were pretty vanilla during the summer in the PNC.
Yes.
Really vanilla. Yeah. Not pretty vanilla. Really vanilla.
Especially in offense.
And I will say, against Portugal, I thought it was fine. Tonga, that I was like, this is what Eagles rugby should be. It was phenomenal. It's the best match I've seen them play since Scotland in Houston.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
That was a long time ago now.
I agree. And I think, too, part of the before we dig into that Tonga match, I think part of the reason why in my mind, Scott might be saying that to players is simply because he needs availability for PNC, right? If you're playing in Europe, then you're unavailable for PNC.
Yep.
And it's like, how can I develop any continuity with these players if I don't have guys that are available to me when I need them for each of these?
You know, I wonder if the guys that he was able to bring over, AJ Pifoletti, that he's talked to those programs, and they've said, yeah, those players will be available to you next, you know, next summer for the PNC. And that was part of the deal. And maybe those were the only players that teams would allow to go. And one of those is McGinty. Now, McGinty's, you know, probably a top seven fly half in the UK, maybe. I mean, he's they talk about him regularly as being a top fly half in Premiership. But, you know, there's depth over there. There's a lot of depth. And it's easy for them to cover for a few weeks for a player like that. Pufaletti, he's not even a starter, so maybe it was easier for the Ceres to let him come over. So, you're going to get some players like that, but I absolutely believe that, you know, the way that the Eagles are going to build into the future, and Scott Lawrence clearly agrees, is that they have to come from MLR. They have to be playing together regularly. Again, Anthem is the best example of that. And I think it's only going to get better. I didn't love the result against Spain, but this result against Tonga was huge. They didn't just win. They were clearly the better team on the field the entire match.
19 points. That's a big result.
That's a tier one versus tier two score.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
that's the difference between a very good team and a good team. And
right
at that point, the USA was playing their best rugby.
Right. Well, so let me ask you this. What do you think the USA did well in that Tonga match? What really showed up to you?
Well, I think
different elements between PNC and what we saw here in this test window.
Look, I think the defense has been solid. So even in PNC when they were getting rocked a couple of times, I thought the defense was good. And the defense was only better during the fall internationals. You know, the most they gave up was to Spain, which was 23. And I think the last one was a try near the end of the match, right? I mean, okay, that happens. Otherwise, they kept every team under 20 points, which if you're going to win regularly in the international competition – you have to keep teams under 20. You're not going to win regularly with teams scoring 20 on you. So that the defense looked great. The difference for me between the Portugal match and the PNC matches in Tonga was the offense. They looked connected. They looked like they had a game plan. It looked like set pieces were practiced over and over and over. It looked like a team that had been practicing together.
Right.
And they can do that.
Right. That because they have all this time between, you know, September and those PNC matches, and they're obviously communicating remotely, and then they have time to get together 6 weeks prior, 5 weeks prior to actually get everything organized and together. It was clearly the distinction between Romania. I mean, a match I thought in August, we should have won.
Yeah.
Right. But that's where you saw the big difference. You know, that Romanian team, I talked with their head coach, you know, and had a real long, great conversation. And he told me they were training in the south of France for 6 weeks prior to that match.
Well, and they
clearly showed up.
They're playing in that Super League conference where they're playing with their international team the entire time, right? They're playing matches on a regular schedule together.
Right.
And that makes such a huge difference.
Right. So I think I agree with you. I thought defensively, I thought their line speed against Tonga was really good. They're playing that kind of... that kind of what I call an umbrella defense, but I think I've heard it called an inside-out defense as well, where you're getting a lot of pressure up the middle, kind of prevent that ball from getting to the edges where it can be it can be a danger, like against a Tonga, like against a Fiji, where they have some real danger men. Could we have closed down that gap between ourselves and Japan had we had some time to organize that defense? No, I think so. But I mean, for me, that's the big difference, right? You know, Scott's focused on defense. He's always been a defensive coach. Yeah. He focused on, let's get the defensive structure right. And then once we have the defensive structure right and we're well organized, then let's work on the offensive piece. And I think that's what we really saw there too.
Here's my concern. You have that piece in McGinty pulling the strings offensively. And I thought, actually, and maybe he made DeHaas look good. But that's the best I've seen DeHaas play in years at any level. DeHaas's kicking game was so much better this fall than it was in the summer. And I think part of that was kick chase was a lot better. They just, it was more organized. There were clearly some miscommunications here and there, but overall I thought he was so much better. But between him and McGinty, the offense just was much smoother. Players seemed to know where to be. And then all of a sudden they were pulling tricks out of the hat. And it was like, whoa, okay, we can do some of this stuff that we see tier one nations do.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I thought that our ruck speed was much better throughout this three test series. I think Ruben was getting cleaner ball and therefore he was getting quicker ball. Obviously when you're getting quicker ball, you could take advantage of, you know, your defensive misalignment. And I think, you know, AJ can get a better vision for where he wants to go with the ball, offensively. So I really thought that was big. We saw a few lapses in the Tonga match. We fell asleep on, I think it was either a try or at least a long run by the backup hooker. There was one by the eight man and a big run out wide. And then, but there was an A gap where he saw everybody napping.
He ate our lunch a couple of times.
Yeah. So I think
that's going to happen. Yeah. And we didn't go, oh crap. Like we didn't,
heads didn't hang.
Normal thing. We just all of a sudden we were back on offense and scoring again. It was like it never happened, which to me was a big difference for this team as well. They just we reacted differently than we've seen Eagles teams in the past where we just fell down after these sorts of things happen.
And I thought our physicality was really good.
So that's one thing that we haven't seen a lot, at least through the summer and then into the fall, was we hadn't played a team that was just supremely physical. And
I thought Romania really was much more physical than we were, and we weren't able to match it.
But they're not the same level as Tonga.
No,
come out and be as physical as we were against Tonga when we played kind of soft against Romania was pleasantly surprising.
Agree. Let's see. I thought a couple notable players in that Tongan match. First of all, kudos to Greg Peterson, half a centurion, 50 caps. Good on him. Led the boys well, led the physicality battle. Congrats to Mark O'Keefe. He brought a big spark, got his first cap in that match. Yep. So it was good to see him. And then, you know, you talked about AJ. I don't want to get too deep into it because it kind of ties to where we'll wrap up our thoughts on the three-match test window. But the big question for me, I thought AJ was absolutely spectacular in that match. You know, just his defensive capability, his offensive capability, his ability. There were a few times he was getting caught and he was looking for offloads or connecting with offloads to players. He was just all over the pitch. I'll talk more about AJ later on.
Four or five conversions and a penalty goal.
Right. I mean, he played lights out, and I think he had a really good fall test window. Very different player from what I saw against that Romania match where, you know, again, maybe because I was in person there, I was a little bit strong.
You know, I think it's not I don't think it's an AJ McGinty thing, and I don't think it's ever been with him on the national team. I honestly think it takes a system for him to work. It's kind of the Tom Brady thing. He's got to have the right system with the right pieces around him. And when he does, it's magical because he's a wizard. That pass where he threw it behind the Tongan defender. Right. Oh my God. Who makes that pass?
Right.
There's only probably 10 guys in the world that can make that pass.
And his ability, there were a number of times throughout all the series, but I saw it in particular in that Tonga match and then in the Spain match too, where he would hold a tackler, right? Go in, tackler's coming, he threw that dummy and that tackler held up. And then after he got past the tackler because of the dummy, he distributed the pass, which allowed, you know, our centers to get some meters and make some break the gain line, get some valuable meters and set up a next really strong phase of play.
Going in, I was concerned about Locke, not because of Greg Peterson, but because you really are only true Locke out there.
Right.
I mean, Dam is a back rower.
He's a back rower.
Helu's a back rower. Like, literally, you look at the roster of locks, and you're like, not a lock? Like, who are we fooling? Right. So I was concerned depth-wise, like, how we were going, especially in scrums, like, how was that going to go with you know, one lock and one back rower in there, and then one lock who's exhausted by an end of a match. And the other piece was our centers, as you bring that up. And, you know, Bissau getting a lot of time.
Yeah.
And Lopetti coming in and, you know, no Boney, you know, a few other guys missing, no Polisike. Like, how was that going to hold up with basically new centers, right? Guys that had
new young centers, by the way.
Yeah. Very young. Bissau is 2 years out of, not even 2 years out of college. Yeah,
correct.
I think, in fact, he's still listed as St. Mary's Gael on the roster. So I had real concerns about how we would hold up there, and I thought they were phenomenal. Bissau was way beyond what I expected from
him. Yeah, I think he was playing beyond his years. Is he a finished product? No, not by any stretch, but I think that gives you an idea of how
if he does one and a half, if he one and a half times what he's doing now, he's going to be a phenomenal center for us in the future.
I mean, really, he had some really good, just strong defensive runs. He had some, defensive plays. He had some really strong offensive runs where he looked strong in the tackle, took a couple guys with him.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with him.
Fullback's a question still. I'm not convinced with anything we've put out there yet at fullback, and we've survived without it. So,
yeah, let's talk, like, put that on the back burner from when we hit the thoughts. I'm with you there. I'm with you, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, but it's more of a, you know, big picture, zoomed out approach as we think about this.
Now we look at the stats for this game, which I think is important to look at here because you would expect Tonga to have maybe not as many carries, but a lot more meterage, at least from past experience of playing against them. We had more meters. We had 100 more meters than them. On less carries.
Wow.
That just tells me like the defense is working.
Right.
And the offense is starting to really click. Defenders beaten is even, which God, I don't know how many matches I've watched of any of the Polynesian teams just breaking tackle after tackle. And it's taking three or four guys to bring somebody down. They had a lot more passes. They had a lot more offloads, which is expected, but those offloads didn't come to a lot.
Right.
And that's the biggest piece is we're making sure we cut off those second, first and second receivers from the ball, which is tough to do against a team that's usually breaking the line more often than not.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's where I think, again, that pressure defense came in handy. And our back three covered for him real well. Yeah. Obviously, if you're coming up hard in the centers, you got to watch out for that chip and chase or that ball over the top. And I thought our back three really covered that pretty well, and we're up to the task, at least in keeping the offense.
I wondered how Mooneyham would hold up against a bigger team.
Mm-hmm.
He was phenomenal. He was him and Augie were great on the corners. I think it was really maybe in the centers where we didn't get enough pressure, where we kind of left them out to dry a couple of times. But outside of that, I thought they were great. They did a great job, especially with Mitch back there. And Mitch is a good player. I just don't see him as kind of the future of fullback for us, but I could be totally wrong. I've been wrong before. So, they did a great job. And, you know, I think Nate brings that experience of playing against guys like this, that he can impart on those younger guys and be like, no, like just stick in there. Don't let them, you know, bully you, basically.
Yeah.
And we didn't. We just did not let them bully ball us.
Right.
That was the biggest part of this.
Yeah, for sure. So let's move forward and talk about that Spain match. The result was 26-23. Kind of a nail biter there at the end, and we really had to hold them off up until the bitter end.
We did that a couple of times to ourselves, didn't we? Did that against Portugal, too.
Yeah. Portugal, I thought that was a great defensive stand, you know, at the end. But let's talk about this one. You know, 3-point victory over Spain, a team that had nipped us the last outing, unfortunately.
And actually, they should have been in the World Cup, but they had an ineligible player.
Right.
And I don't remember Romania or somebody took their spot because
was it Romania or it wasn't Europe. Portugal, was it?
I don't. It was one of the two. I don't remember. They had like a round robin there, but one of them took their spot because they had a player that was ineligible. I don't remember where he's from. Probably South Africa. I don't know. That's where they always seem to come from. I you know, this was kind of Portugal 2.0, right? We knew what kind of game plan they were going to have. I think my biggest concern was I thought our scrum didn't do as well as I thought they might. We did get some scrum penalties, but I thought we should have just demolished their scrum. We were a much bigger, much more experienced front row that we brought in, and that never really came to fruition. So I was a little disappointed with that.
Well, yeah, agreed. And let's be honest, that front row, the first two matches against Portugal and then the one following it against Tonga, I mean, that was probably our best front row pairing.
Yeah.
And in this match, we, you know, Scott reversed it, right? And brought in, you know, the two props that had been coming off the bench to start the match, and he flipped it.
I think it was needed, though. You know, especially front rowers, you want to keep them as fresh as you possibly can. If you're starting two back-to-back weeks, I think having the third week coming off the bench is probably not terrible.
Right.
We got to show depth at some point.
Right, 100%. You got to have four solid props.
And I thought Pifoletti was by far our best hooker. Klein was fine, but I was excited to see Pifoletti back as a starter.
Yeah, I thought Klein missed some key throws in that first match, and maybe that's just experience at the international level, and it'll come with time. Let's hope that's the case. But that he had me concerned at that hooker position just because I thought he missed some key throws. But this Spain match was probably our worst performance of the three. Now let's keep it all in context, folks.
Wins a win, right?
Wins a win, and sometimes you got to win dirty, and sometimes wins get you on the edge of your seat. Let me just say that I would have been happy with with out of three matches, two wins and one loss, right? But to get 3-0 was awesome, and so I'll take it.
Yeah. And it boosted our world rugby ranking, which we'll discuss here in a minute. But I think looking at the stats, we should have had more meters made from the carries that we had. 136 carries and only getting 363 meters. It was disappointing. Now, Spain did what we did to Tonga. They put a lot of pressure on us. Lot of pressure. And there were multiple times where McGinty turned and the defense player was on Lopetti and he had to throw it out wide, which – Spain's fast enough to cover that space. Maybe we should have kicked a little bit more. I don't know. I don't want to second guess any of that. 165 passes, 8 offloads, but 16 turnovers conceded.
Yeah.
That is just far too many.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think one of the things that I noticed about Spain's game that I really appreciated, and I hope that, and I know Scott was obviously, he'll go back and watch the film, this, that, and the other, but hopefully that is his, he and his staff will be taking note of this. I thought Spain was really intelligent at attacking the breakdown. What I mean by that is, for folks that don't know, you know, you can't contest every single ruck. Because when you contest every single ruck, at some point you're going to commit penalties.
Yeah. Right. And leave too much space outside because you end up with two or three guys in every ruck. And if so, you're doing that every 5 yards.
They were really smart about balancing when they were going to jackal.
Yep.
They were really smart about, you know, when they were going to leave the ruck alone and just get that defensive structure out wide.
Yep.
I thought that they were also selective in their counter ruck. Notice that they won a couple balls and got a couple of turnovers with counter ruck. So they were really intelligent about when they attacked that ruck. And of the three matches, I thought Spain did the best job at really attacking our ruck and disrupting our ruck to slow down our ball.
Maybe it's a learning experience we needed to have.
Yeah.
We need to go back. There's film now of, hey, we got to do so much better here. You know, it was easy in the first few matches. You know, somebody had to show us out on it. But I, you know, turnovers, I thought the scrum wasn't quite, I mean, it was good. We were still the better scrum of the two, but I really think we should have just demolished our scrum. Line out.
Yeah.
Was so disappointing. Yeah. I don't know what happened between Tonga and Spain in terms of our line out. And I'm not sure if it was our line out or it was just defensively what Spain did. We weren't able to get our hand on any of their ball. And they were able to get their hands on our ball quite a bit, which was the complete reverse of what happened in Tonga, where Tonga couldn't complete a lineout to save their life.
Right.
We almost stole every single one of their lineouts. It was so bad. But that was really disappointing. So set piece, there's going to be work to be done for sure for this Eagles team, but plenty of time to do it. So Scott Lawrence can go back to the drawing board on it.
What was really disappointing for me, and I'm pretty sure this is the same for everybody here watching in America. Well, there are two things. The broadcast didn't pick up until 20 minutes into the match, and that was on replay, right? So Spain, by the point, by the
Spain
time
had scored 10 points.
Spain had scored 10 points. They were up 10 nothing.
These 9 minutes, 10 right? to nothing. What?
Right. And then we couldn't even get, you know, we got a Spanish.
Luckily. I speak Spanish as a fairly fluent, so I didn't even really notice.
Yeah, well, for those of us who can't, we were really hung out to dry and forced to create our own commentary. But, you know, I mean, a little disappointing, like USA Rugby can't get, you know, two guys to watch it and broadcast, you know, somehow.
Huh.
Get a broadcast in there.
There's like people who do podcasts around the United States.
Well, Ben Holden is my guy, man. Ben puts on does a great job, and I'm sure there was guys available, but nevertheless, what frustrated me, so Spain goes up 10-0. We come back, we start to control the match, and it was like that last 20 minutes. Corey Daniel gets a yellow, and then the last 20 minutes, it was like all the air was out of our tires. We let Spain score three tries in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was very different from what we had seen for the United States, even in those PNC matches.
Two tries.
Yeah.
It was like, 10. They had 10 in the first half. So they scored two tries in the second. I think they missed both of their conversions.
So I was really frustrated by that, especially because I thought, at least in most of the PNC, with the exception of maybe Japan, we played really 80 minutes every game, something that we hadn't seen out of a USA team in quite some time. So hopefully that was just an anomaly, you know, tired legs. Guys were tired from a tour, tired of being on the road, had really got a lot of miles on the tires. But quite frankly, you're going to have to do that, you know.
Yeah.
If you qualify for the Rugby World Cup, you got to be prepared to, you know.
And I wonder if we're setting ourselves up well though for PNC, because there will be a little bit of a break, but most of these guys are going to get plenty of action during the MLR season, and hopefully, health crossing fingers, knock on wood, that if we're healthy, legs will be there. Like they're going to get a little bit of a break at the end of the season, maybe a couple of weeks. And then depending on who's making the playoffs and that sort of thing before the PNC starts. And that will help us because we were not helped out by the fact that, you know, PNC was right in the middle of the season. They just kind of had to break from MLR to go play PNC and come back.
Well, no, the July test window, but we came right off that, you know, August 8th final, and then we rolled right into PNC.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but again, you know, it doesn't give us an opportunity to get in camp and get everybody in camp, you know, with several weeks of a lead up.
I would be surprised if that wasn't part of the thinking process for moving the MLR schedule up to February again.
Oh, it's funny to mention that. I see what you did there. I see what you did. You just kind of rolled right into our next topic, folks. We want to talk about the MLR schedule, and Rick hit the nail on the head. Okay. So for folks who don't know, schedule came out, what, a week ago?
Yep.
And We'll talk about the players union. It was like within 24 hours, the players union came out, and
I feel like that's a whole podcast of its own there. There's so much there.
There's a lot to unpack there, and we're not going to get into all that. I think it's worthy of noting that
there's concerns.
Players Association came out and had concerns. I think their biggest concern is, hey, we're talking about player welfare, and yet we're having, several teams play three matches within an 8 or 9 day window. And so we'll talk about that component here in a moment. But I will say
Wednesday's a rugby day.
Yeah, Wednesday. Well, so is Tuesday. Sometimes
and Thursday, sometimes.
And occasionally, if you can have an odd Friday, be a rugby day. But folks, I will say this, just a shameless plug. We have a new segment coming out for 2025 called The Coach's Corner. The Hammer's sitting down with every one of the coaches from the 11 teams. I've communicated with all of them. We've got several of them done, working on others in December that we're going to get going here. But yeah, we're sitting down and pretty much asking the same questions of all the coaches. So you can kind of almost do an apples to apples comparison with these coaches. But my objective was to try to provide fans of those respective teams, but fans like, Rick here, who doesn't have a team any longer and is going to be looking maybe to select one, or at least to just have a pick of some of the best matches throughout the season.
I'm accepting offers all season long.
He is taking offers.
You just send me some swag.
I was going to say, all merch will be accepted.
I'll put my Venmo out on socials. Highest bidder.
Yeah, there you go. So I've talked to all these coaches. I just actually had a great conversation with Simon Cross from OGDC, and he said, look, so what fans need to understand, there's a couple things with the schedule. No, it's not ideal, but we had some constraints that really had to work with. And one of the biggest ones came from the players last year. And I talked with a number of players, and there wasn't a player that liked having that two-week break for the international window in between the regular season and the playoffs. And that is particularly true of teams in which players were in the playoffs. You know, talking with the Hounds players here, they didn't like that idea. And quite frankly, that meant that, hey, and I don't think USA Rugby liked the idea either. They wanted all those players to be ready and fresh and available, rolling right in and not holding something back, or not, maybe taking time away and going, you know what, I'm going to skip that that July couple tests because, my team's in the playoffs. So I think that was one. I think two is stadium availability. We see some stadiums that are, some teams are going to have multiple stadiums that they're going to play in this year. So I think stadium availability was a piece. Obviously they pushed that schedule back into February. Don't forget, we're bookended by, in the northern climates, some colder temps where, you could get sideways snow. And I don't know that a lot of teams loved 2 years ago. The Hounds had five home matches in a row. That doesn't do anything to help build fan continuity.
I was at the New England match where it was like 25. It was quite cold. And then I was at Chicago the following weekend where it was snowing.
Right. And so I think given all those constraints, the MLR did the best job that they could. Right, to try to squeeze things in, realizing that players also like having two bye weeks.
Yeah.
Right. So they didn't want to take one of those bye weeks away, because inevitably you would have to probably have a team that might have a bye week real early in the season or real late, in which the bye doesn't help you at all.
Yeah. And then from a kind of an owner club standpoint, you're not going to get rid of home matches because you only have so many,
right?
And you desperately need that they desperately need the revenue.
Yeah. Right.
So it's a really tough spot.
Right. So all that being said, Rick, let's kind of get the rundown fans. We're going to talk about just, and I've got a unique perspective here. Rick, not having a team to really back every week, has the ability to kind of pick and choose what games he's going to focus on each week. So I'm curious as to what some of the key matchups he's going to watch during the season are going to be. We'll talk about the impact of the schedule, like what teams could start hot, what teams could start cold just because of the way their schedule is organized.
Yep.
And then what do we think of midweek matches? We'll roll right into some of those difficulties in scheduling for some of the teams who's really kind of really in a tough spot with their schedule. And I think we'll unveil why that pattern exists here in a couple minutes on the back end. So first, let's talk about key matchups. What games do you like, Rick?
Oh, there's I mean, obviously, I guess week one, we've got Miami versus Old Glory, which I think, you know,
that could be like a playoff, like a playoff.
Yeah, it feels like a first round playoff matchup. I like what Miami's building. You know, obviously not a ton of American players, but you know, some key players that could potentially become, you know, good USA Eagles at some point. Caceres was with Sharks this last year. He's right. Moving on.
Just got his first cap, by the way. Forgot to mention that. Yep.
Thomas Cubilla just was officially signed by Miami, and they're building a heck of a back line with the South Americans. So they're going to be exciting to watch. I think they'll kind of be maybe not exactly the same as the Jackals, but kind of a similar style, exciting, lots of scoring. I'm not really sure what we're going to see from Old Glory. I expect that they're just going to be a solid team. They're going to be very committed to the defensive side and win matches by forcing mistakes, which is what they've kind of done the last couple of seasons.
It's kind of funny, not to interrupt, but, you know, kind of to piggyback off that, because I think it's a really good point. Having spoken with Simon Cross, I think he said something like 90% of the rosters is remaining from last year, is turned over from last year. So, you know, we could see a lot of continuity out of that team.
I love having been in Dallas with the lack of continuity that we had until the last two seasons, seeing all the players returning this to the team this last season was very exciting, and having the same coach, which we hadn't had. We'd had four coaches in 3 years or whatever it was. So it was exciting to have the continuity. You saw the difference it makes. I do hope that Old Glory turns a good season around, because they need it. But I think also they deserve it. I think what they're building there is really exciting.
Agreed.
I think they've bolstered the team with a lot of American talent over the last couple of seasons. Super strong on the youth side, which is always exciting to see. I coach high school. You can see over my shoulder here, my Dallas Jesuit jacket there where I'm coaching. Loving working with the high school kids. So youth rugby is a huge push for me in terms of, you know, what teams are really making the commitment to developing rugby in the U.S. So that's a good one. Any game where Houston and Chicago are playing are pretty exciting. I think that match is going to be good. It's not one of my top matches, but just week one, we've got great matchups. San Diego versus Seattle, I think is a phenomenal matchup.
Chicago and Houston bookend each other, which is kind of interesting. Like they start and finish their seasons.
That sounds like a weather thing. Are they the most dipole weather?
You're probably right. You're probably right.
That's probably why it's and then actually that Houston Chicago game is one of the wins I'm potentially targeting.
Nice
trip. We'll see. I don't know if I'm making a trip that early, but it's on the radar at least.
Gotcha.
So other matches that, you know, outside of week one, I've got week three has two juicy matches.
Yes. And
Chicago, New England.
Yes.
New England traveling to Chicago and Seattle traveling to
Houston. Agreed.
Two huge matchups early in the season. And I may be at that Houston Seattle match. That is big time targeted on my calendar. One, because Houston and Seattle both have a bunch of former Dallas Jackals playing for them. So it'd be fun to go support them. But also just because I think the expectation was the Western Conference final was going to be Houston versus Seattle.
Right.
Those were the two best teams in the league outside of New England the entire season.
Yeah.
And both those teams have only gotten better this offseason, gotten younger, better in the pack. You know, Christian Dyer going to LA is going to be a loss for Houston, but Juan D'Oliver, scrum half, Sam Tuifua joining that back row. I mean, that's going to be a huge matchup. And then Chicago versus New England. Right. You know, it's going to be early. I don't know what the weather's going to be like March 2nd in Chicago, but both teams beautiful. Are used to the cold, right? So
it'll be beautiful. Yeah, expect to see me on the sideline with my wool coat. And
oh, you're not going to wear your budgie shorts? No,
okay. Smuggler's.
But that's going to be a huge matchup. I think I expect Chicago to be much better this season. I think some of the, you know, questionable coaching decisions last season, I think hampered them early in the season. And you saw how much better they were towards the end of the season. I think they may be the most improved team in MLR this season outside the Anthem. It's kind of to be said that it's going to be Anthem. But I think Chicago is going to make a big leap.
The key for them, because they're getting some real help from the Prem, some Prem players.
Yeah.
The key for them is going to be, can they get that continuity early enough in the season to get that motor rolling?
So
can Chris get that? Chris Latham, of course, new head coach, can he get and build that continuity preseason enough for that team to get a really strong start?
I think they're, and we talked about what are the teams that are going to have the hardest starts and who are going to power through that versus teams that are going to have easy starts. Right. I have Chicago as my hardest to start the season.
Okay. Why is that?
You've got New England in week three. In week one, you've got Houston in Houston. I just think that's going to be, and you're going to play against Utah at home. I don't know what Utah is going to look like this year. They should be much better, but you know, they're questionable every year, but who, if they come out flying, that's going to be a problem. And then you've got, Miami in Miami. In March, it's going to be not necessarily hot, but it's going to be humid as balls down there. So that's going to be a tough one. Then they're at home against Old Glory. So they've got some, I just think that early first 4 or 5 weeks is going to be huge for them. If they can get to 500 by week going into week five, they'll probably be fine, but they could easily be 0-4. I think that's the tough part. Like you said, they've got new players coming into key positions, and they've got to get some continuity early on there. So they need to get in camp as early as they can and get going, because coming out the gate against Houston's not going to be fun.
So it's interesting you talk about a team that could really have a tough go of it early on. Let's talk about the flip side for me, a team that, and this is not like homerism whatsoever, the team that I think could really get a huge start in the season is NOLA. Right. They have, you know, they have the Anthem early. Anthem would be better, but you know, what is better than 0-16? Anything's better than 0-16.
Sharks early.
Again, you know, they were, I think, just under 500 last year. So I thought they were a really quality outfit, and they will continue to get better. But again, you know, NOLA's been at this thing for seven seasons now. So you'd expect them to have a little tighter ship, and Danny Lee, you know, being in there, he's already down there. He's gotten a strong start. And then you got Utah, and it's like, what bag of tricks can Coop pull out of his magic hat down there, his Kiwi hat in Utah. So, you know, those are those are three teams that were, you know, near the, none of them made the playoffs, where they were bottom of the, you know, two of the three were at the bottom of the barrel in the respective conferences. So you got to think that that's a team that could come into that start of the season.
I think NOLA's going to make a big leap. Maybe not quite as big as Chicago, but I think they'll be much better. And most of that is going to be because they're bringing in a lot more talent. I think the new ownership group, is really, committed to, you know, upping the talent level. Maybe at the, you know, at the loss of some potential USA Eagles in there, but I mean, it is what it is. This is still a business, so you still got to win. My team to come out of the gates hot is San Diego. I think their schedule is not tough
until the end.
Until the end,
we'll get to.
Now they're playing at home against Seattle early. That's absolutely when you want to catch Seattle. I don't think you're going to want to catch Seattle mid-season, end season. That's going to be tough.
Right.
Then they've got Anthem in Charlotte early. That should be cakewalk. Should be a cakewalk. They've got Old Glory early. And then Rugby LA. I mean, they could start the season 6-0.
Right.
Just looking at the schedule, and then Sharks in week six. They could be 6-0 by week six, and I wouldn't be super surprised. Now, you know, they've got some turnover, so
including head coach,
yeah,
John Menenti, who had a great conversation with Bobby coming in.
Maybe that's going to be a huge bump for them. You know, maybe it was just getting kind of old and stale with Lee, and hopefully Lee is great in New Orleans. I would love to see him succeed down there, but. You know, they just need a spark, and maybe this is it, and they could just take off this year. Not that they haven't been good other years, but I expect them to be the best team in the Western Conference by the end of the season, and that's saying something because I really think Seattle and Houston are going to be fighting for that number one spot hard. So I wouldn't be surprised with any of them in the number one spot, to be fair. Everybody else in the West is probably going to be chasing.
Yeah, and let's talk about some of those teams in the West could be chasing and why they could be chasing. I mean, for me, RFC LA is a tough spot in the first 6 weeks. I mean, really you got tough. New England, you got Houston, you got a bye week, you got San Diego, Seattle, and NOLA. And that's your first
six weeks, they could be
0-5.
0-5.
New head coach there who's coming in is Stephen Hoyles.
Same as the old coach. Stephen Hoyles in L.A.
There's a bond there.
Interesting.
And then, you know, Utah, I was talking with Greg Cooper, and they got a little bit of a tough spot, just the fact that they got their bye week one.
Yeah.
So now, you know, you have 16 matches and only one bye week to break up.
Dallas had the first week one bye week last year. It was really weird.
That's tough. You know, you got your bye week and then week two, and then you go on a run with Seattle.
Then you have like 10 straight games or something with no break. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a moment as we start to, you know, bring this to a head here. Let's talk about this tough stretch. Basically, I'm going to call it the weeks from hell because you got week 11, week 12, and week 13, and week 14.
Yeah.
And in this month of rugby, you have some teams that are really up against it because of scheduling. To where you have, like, I was looking at the MLR schedule, like week 11, and week 11 flows. Some matches technically have two matches in week 11.
In week 11.
Yeah. So what teams are getting the raw end of the deal here?
I, at least from my initial look, it looked like Anthem was getting pretty screwed, where they have like three games in 8 days or 9 days or something like that.
Okay. If
I remember. I don't remember who the other team was. There was another team that had, I think it was 3-10.
Yeah, so 3-10 RFC LA.
Okay.
On the 22nd of April, they got at New England. So they're going out east, going cross country. Then they come back and they play San Diego at home.
26.
And then they go up to Seattle on May 2nd. So three games in 10 days. Seattle also has three games in 10 days. You go out east to Anthem. You go at NOLA. That's a tough run, that's 4 days later.
Anthem, right? Anthem is 18, 22, 23, and 27. So they're three games in 9 days.
Yeah.
Is that 10 days? That's 10 days. Sorry.
Yeah. So that's, Seattle's got a tough one that, you know, do they even go back to the West Coast? Do they just go from,
I think you stay
from East Coast and then jump down to NOLA and find some place to train for a couple of days? And then you go back west where you're playing RFC LA on May 2nd. So, again, three games in 10 days. Utah has a tough one, three games in 9 days, and San Diego has three games in 8 days. Rick, I got to ask a question. What do these four teams I just mentioned have in common?
They're all West Coast
teams. Yeah. And so there's your answer, right? For fans that are thinking about it, why is
Dallas not being in the league?
Dallas not being in the West. Right. That's the way.
And then screwing Anthem just because.
So I, San Diego has a game, three games the 27th of April, which is at home against LA, the 30th, yep, which is at Utah, and then they, and then at home on the 4th of May, which is NOLA. So they got two of the three.
San Diego's not getting the short end of the stick on this.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's tough. 3 games in 8 days is a rough one, and Utah with 3 games in 9 days is a tough one. But I will say that both those teams have two of the three are at home, whereas for me, I mean, I, like I said, that Seattle run with 3 games in 10 days, but two of them are away. That's a rough business.
Away, and not just away, but like cross-country away.
Right, right, yeah, right. Right, no, so that's going to be tough.
Obviously, if Dallas had stayed, this would not have – has. It would not have been as complicated, and I think there wouldn't be as big an issue with all this, but it's neither here nor or there now, so
you can't do anything about it. So let me ask you this, just in kind of bring this whole schedule thing to the close. I think one of the last things that people really riled up about was these midweek matches where you got, you know, it used to be like you get a match on a Friday, then a Saturday, and, you know, a couple on Saturday, a couple on Sunday. You're like, sweet, I can watch rugby 3 days in a row, and I can watch all 3 games live, right? Maybe even catch a fourth if it's, you know, a later game. Here we're getting a Monday match. We're getting a Wednesday match. I think we're getting a Thursday match. We're getting some Friday matches. What are your thoughts on this?
I, as somebody who played rugby for many years and football for other years in between there, I love the weekend, just play, you get to go enjoy yourself afterwards, not worried about work, you're not worried about school or whatever. And, I just having a game on a Wednesday is just, I hate the fact that the NFL, I'm okay with the Monday night game. Now we're throwing in the Thursday night game and the occasional right. Saturday game. I'm just like, no, please stop. Right. It's too much. Like, I can only get so many days away from the wife.
Yeah.
I really love being able to, like football, sit down on a Saturday and enjoy a bunch of college football. Sit down on a Sunday, enjoy a bunch of NFL. Sit down on a Sunday or Saturday and enjoy a bunch of rugby. Like, I can hip hopscotch around DFW and watch a bunch of rugby matches on a Saturday. Wednesday match. Who's coming to that when you're barely right. able to get 2,500, 3,000 people in seats?
Right.
How many people are you going to get in seats on a Wednesday at 6?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to get the games in, but I think it's going to have an unfortunate, you know, effect on butts and seats, how it looks on TV. So, therefore, sponsorships. It's unfortunate. I wish they would be able to stick to, you know, occasional Friday nights, you know, a couple of matches on Saturday, a couple of matches on Sunday. That's the best schedule they can do for TV viewing, for people trying to go to matches. That's the way it should be in the future. You know, just hope that, you know, they can figure out a way to schedule and maybe, you know, we qualify at the PNC and they don't have to schedule this way in 2026. Who knows?
Interesting.
I think this is all prefaced by the fact that the Eagles have to qualify during PNC.
Yes.
They don't have to, but they have to.
They have to. Yeah. Yeah, they have to. And I think it's they have to as much on the field as there is off the field, because you want to qualify for 2027 in order to prepare.
We can start pumping money in to get ready for 2031.
Right.
We can start it next summer, right? As soon as PNC is over, September or whatever. That's still summer here in Texas, by the way. Summer doesn't end until October.
The summer lasted until, you know, November here in Chicago, to be honest with you, this year. So it was pretty damn nice. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that they have to qualify. And so,
and that brings us all the way around to,
right.
Hey, World Rugby, USA Rugby are invested in MLR. MLR is obviously key to putting talent on the field for the Eagles and getting consistent play for players that are going to be Eagles, because even our guys overseas, most of them are not getting meaningful minutes every match. It's a couple of guys in France. I'm lower level, aren't even starting. And you know, if they come over here, not only are they going to start, but you know, they may end up proving to be phenomenal. Sam Gola, for example, like right. I'm not sure he goes and starts over in Europe anywhere, but here he can be a star on a team.
Right. Right.
And be an Eagle and be a leader.
Right.
And I think, you know, as we build that, the Eagles will continue to blossom, especially if we continue, you know, with the leadership of Scott Lawrence. We've been talking about Lawrence for years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many years? Yeah. 6-7 years we've been talking. This is the guy who needs to be there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And he's there. And the results show that we were all right. We all knew. It was easy to see. We could see it in front of our faces. And USA Rugby could not. But finally did. And hopefully this will continue the upward trajectory of USA Rugby.
Yeah. And I will say, folks, if you're not paying attention, there are some things going at the world rugby level that are important to recognize with respect to that 2031 bid.
Oh, yeah. That 2031 ain't guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, but I think if you listen to Dr. Chris Robinson, who is just selected to head world rugby, he was on another podcast, The Good, Bad, and Rugby from the UK. And he talked about in that conversation, he talked about, you know, the importance of the United States and hosting the World Cup here. I really think that World Rugby is committed to it. They're dumping a ton of money into the United States and the USAR, and they are committed to it. But we've got, I mean, I think that critical step is, like you said, we've got to qualify for 2027. So I think we're going to see guys
like ASAP as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah. You're going to see guys like McGinty, guys like Peterson, a couple other guys that are, you know, yes, getting a little long in the tooth. But, you
they
know,
may be, they may be helping this team qualify and we may not see them again after that.
Correct. I happen to agree with you. And then Scott will start developing those players that are going to be in the mix for 2027. So we'll have to wait and see.
Future, yeah. I'm sure he's thinking, I'm not just getting guys for 2027. I'm getting guys who are going to be at the top of their game in 2031 when it means the absolute most for this country.
Right. And that's why I think you saw Storti starting at 15 last game. Right, because he needs to have an answer at fullback, a long-term answer at fullback. Yep. I mean, Fricker can be there in 2027, but, you know, and Fricker's fabulous at fullback, but you know, he's 29. Yeah. He's also 29 years old. So, you know, he is not an answer for 2031. Somebody else has to get some minutes. Oh, and
I mean, one of the things I'll be looking at this season is because I don't have a team, is I'm going to be looking at players as potential Eagles and guy, and where are we? Like, do we have good front row depth coming up? Do we have guy like is Seth Smith going to get a bunch of minutes this year? Is he going to ride the bench? Like,
yeah, and I think we do, and I think we got some guys are going to that Scott's going to work in. He's already started to trickle that in. I think the one position, well, there are two positions that there are real question marks. You know, for the near and long term. Well, so for the long term future, is it 10 and 15? 10.
Yep, 10 and 15. Absolutely, and they're so key. They're going to
And I'm more worried about the 10 spot because. You know, I think we talked about just how much AJ means to the success of the Eagles.
It's unbelievable. It's night and day difference. As good as Cardi's been, like, it's just not the same.
Yeah. So agreed. So, all right. So, man, I think we cooked this one pretty good, folks. It's been a lot of fun getting Rick on the show. He's always so knowledgeable and always such a joy to have conversations with. I wish Rick was my neighbor. We would spend a lot of time, you know, sitting in the garage, and bullshitting
the Hammerhead pub.
Yeah, that's right. But I might be able to sell you know, a remodel on my wife if that were the case, and just tell them that Rick is financing it. But no, seriously, folks, been a lot of fun bringing Rick on the show, and hopefully you gained some valuable insights not only about the US Eagles and where that fall tour ended up, but also about the MLR schedule. And you've kind of penciled in some matches that you're looking forward to in 2025. And speaking of 2025, don't forget to check back in with the Rugby Rant and the Hammer himself, because I'm going to be bringing you. I've got I've got commitment from 10 of the 11 coaches. I'm working on that on the 11th, just getting some communication going. But we have got the Coach's Corner that's going to be preempting the season. We're just going to be releasing these Coach's Corner segments. They're about 35 to 45 minutes. I'm sitting down with each of the coaches. Like I said, comparing to apples, asking some of the same questions of each of the coaches. So you can have a look at each one of the teams and kind of get your pre-2025 assessment of each one of the teams.
Hey, I'm looking forward to watching them.
It's been a lot of fun, Rick, and I've gotten a greater appreciation for some of these guys, even the guys that I've met before, like Chris and like, you know, like Simon Cross and,
yeah,
and Clarkie, and of course, Danny Lee, but I've got a new appreciation for these guys and just had some really quality conversations, and I've enjoyed it tremendously. And it's like I said to Simon, when we recorded the one today, I said, you know, each one of the conversations has, not that one's better than the other, but it's gotten better. Like, it's been that much more joyful to have the conversation just because each time I learn something new, yep, and it's enriched in my understanding. So check back in with us, the Rugby Rant. We'll have the Coach's Corner running up to 2025. And of course, we're going to take a little bit of a break, but we're going to start back in with the new episodes in January. We'll be releasing the Coach's Corner sometime thereabouts. And I know Rick's going to be back on pretty frequently, I'm sure. And he's maybe he'll make a decision about what team is going to be rooting for throughout the season.
I may be wearing some different kit throughout the year. So, you know,
and he can be bought.
Look, I'll put my Venmo up at some point out here.
Cash works best. All right. So, folks, I hope you've enjoyed this as much as we have, and we thank you again for joining the Rugby Rant podcast and checking in with us, where we seek to grow rugby one fan at a time. I want to thank my man, Rick Collins. It's always an absolute pleasure. And, folks, I think we'll see you at the next.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.